You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey everyone, welcome to this episode of Locked On Cavaliers. As always, I'm your host, Chris Manning, from Fear of the Sword and the Step Back. Today is a Monday, that means Mailbag Monday. Got a couple great questions that I'm going to answer, and then I'm going to recap the Hornets game from Sunday, which the Cavs won by 7 points. And there were a lot of interesting things that actually happened in this game, in a matchup of two of the better teams in the Eastern Conference so far this year. Before we get into that, a couple notes. First off, this week, we'll have obviously what we have today. Tomorrow we'll preview the Raptors game. Wednesday, recap the Raptors game. And then Thursday and Friday, I will unfortunately be away. I'm going to be in St. Louis for a work trip. Will not have time to watch the game Wednesday night until this weekend, and I'm not going to have a chance to record a preview for the Pistons game. So Carter Rodriguez, who's been in the show a couple times, is one of my favorite people to work with, works for Fear the Sword, knows the Cavs, we're also works for 120 Sports, is going to fill in for me in those 2 days. He's going to drop 2 episodes, and he's going to help out with the hosting duties there to cover, so make sure you guys, the listeners, can get the shows you need while I step away. I got to give a big shout out to Carter for being so willing to help me with that and making sure you guys, the listeners, get what you needed. With that being said, still submit your mailbag questions for next week. And then on Saturday, as a little bonus, I'm going to drop this episode that I've been teasing a lot and just haven't had time to edit yet, but Daniel Rao from Fear the Sword and The Step Back, and he's a great illustrator and all that stuff. He's been on the show before as well, talking about Cleveland sports, talking about the year in Cleveland sports. I think it's a time where we maybe need to reflect on some of the better things happening right now. And Daniel, in that podcast, is one of the most fun things I've ever recorded. So you look out for that on Saturday. And before we get into the show, just going to let you guys know that today's podcast is brought to you by SeatGeek. As always, SeatGeek is a great sponsor. They're a really good friend of the show. SeatGeek is the best way for you to buy and sell tickets right on your phone. If you need tickets for a game, a concert, whatever you want to go to, a play, you can get it on SeatGeek. Right in the app, you're going to know exactly what the price of the ticket is. You're going to know exactly all the fees. And you're going to know exactly what you're paying. You're also going to be able to see the view from your seat right in the app. And you're going to know exactly what your seat's going to look like and how good of a view you're going to get when you're at the game. There's no hidden fees. There's no issues with SeatGeek. And it's really a great product. I love SeatGeek because it's the easiest way for me to hop on my phone and know what I'm going to get. You know, looking ahead to Thanksgiving, I have my uncle's coming into town. And him, me, my dad are going to go see a Cavs game. I'm going to take him to a Cavs game for fun. Go as a spectator for once, and we're going to go watch the Cavs and the Mavericks, and the only way I'm getting my tickets is from SeatGeek. Additionally, my listeners today can save $20 on their first purchase by using the code LOCAVS. All you have to do is go under the settings tab, enter the promo code LOCAVS, and you'll save $20 off your first purchase. You can get $20 off your first purchase by using the code LOCAVS and save $20 off that first purchase on SeatGeek. So thanks to SeatGeek again for sponsoring the show. And so we're going to get into the mailbag questions. The first up is, we have a question from Slade, who via email, who says, what would it take for the Cavs to get Willie Cauley-Stein? Would Jordan McRae and or Kay Felder be enough? So that's a really good question. The tricky thing is, Willie Cauley-Stein, of course, is now available, but other teams could offer something better, even if his value is not that high, and the Kings have an incentive to trade a guy like him because of the gluttony of bigs they have up front. I don't personally think McRae or Kay Felder would be enough. I think you might have to just give a pick if that's something you'd want to do. But I do think that's a good way to look at what you could do if you're the Cavs and looking to get a younger player who, you know, is someone that would fit. I certainly think there's more upside for him than Birdman. You could certainly fit him on the roster if you could find a way to get rid of Mo Williams. Maybe you could use Mo Williams to save the Kings some money. And you get a young player in return who's on a very affordable deal. I'm a big Cauley-Stein guy. I loved him coming out of college. He's a versatile big. Certainly has his issues, but those issues don't matter as much if you can maximize what he does well in Cleveland. And I think that's the kind of guy the Cavs have to target. And I'm a fan of his again. I don't think it'll happen. I think other teams could offer more. I know some people that are smarter than me when it comes to young players and have watched him more aren't super high on him, but I'm a fan, and I think it'd be worth a flyer if you could get him for, let's say, Mo Williams, uber-protected second-round pick. I would do that in a heartbeat. From Eden AM on Twitter, at Eden AM, when do we get to start worrying about Dunleavy, or is there a better way to get him going? That's a great question. I'm working on something about Dunleavy and kind of his spots right now, but if you look, he started in place of JR on Sunday. 17 minutes, 1-6 from the field, 0-3 from 3, 3 rebounds, just 2 points. Not the best game from him, and he's not really having a great year. Currently, he is shooting 34% from 3 on about 3 attempts per game, and is sort of just kind of there. I mean, he's 36, so the age is certainly a concern. You would hope that he's just kind of getting used to playing in this environment, right? Like, I think you're getting him in the spots where you expect him to knock down shots. He's trailing on fast breaks. He's getting the ball as a safety valve in the offense as the last guy to get a shot. And that's really, really cool. Dunleavy is getting where you'd want him to be. And I think you just maybe have to give him time and hope that he gets there. That I think, is the way you have to hope. I mean, he has not shot this poorly from three, dating back to when he was 26 in a half year with the Pacers, when he shot 28.3% from three. Hasn't shot a full season that bad since he shot 28.5% back when he was 25 with the Warriors back in 05-06. So he's been a very consistent shooter. Unless the back injury is really a problem, he should be fine. I would expect his numbers to go up. When he gets comfortable, maybe he's still getting into shape a little bit. But I don't think it's too big of a deal just yet. I think he's moving well. Like, I think that indicates that it's maybe just a rhythm thing. Shooters need to get in rhythm. He's not a guy who's a high-volume three-point shooter either. This isn't a guy like JR that's going to be able to quickly shoot himself out of something, right? Like, he's taking 2.9 shots a game. The most shot, he hasn't taken more than 4.2 threes a game since he was 28, 08-09, so it's been a while since he's been a higher volume three-point shooter. He's a guy who picks his spots, who fits in with the flow of the team, and if he's playing 60 minutes a game, he's not getting 30 minutes a night to really work himself out of a slump. I would just expect it to take him time. I think one big game would do a lot for him, we'll go from there, but I wouldn't be too worried just yet. It's so early in the year, and I think he's moving again well enough where I wouldn't worry too much. Last question this week comes from J_Bell3ELL. Are they riding LBJ early to build a conference lead and hopefully rest him later, or should this be expected? I think this is a good question. I think how the Cavs using LeBron is a little bit different than last year. I think normally he's playing, you know, not with bench units. Kevin Love is really doing a lot of that. I think LeBron's really doing a lot when the Cavs have played badly. You look at how he played again on Sunday. They got down in the first half without him. They struggled without him, and then he led the comeback late. He was of the big three on the floor. He was the one orchestrating everything. I think ideally you would want Kevin Love and Kyrie to do a little bit more, but I don't know if this is exactly unexpected either. I think they're clearly, obviously, better, a lot better with him on the floor. I think resting him right now, it's so early that I don't think it's necessarily a priority to just give him a night off 9 games into the season. This is so early in the year that you don't want to just give him all this rest right now while he's in a rhythm. If he's chasing an MVP and that's on his mind, you certainly don't want to disrupt that. They do maybe want to get a lead. I think they do want to assert themselves. I think they're still getting all their pieces in order. I think we're seeing that with how Lou is managing rotations, with Dunleavy needing to get his foot in, and I think Tyronn Lue is also a guy who's not necessarily going to take his foot off the pedal just to get LeBron rest against the Hornets. And LeBron also just wants to win. I don't necessarily think we're at a point where it's too much of a deal to worry about how much he's playing. I think, you know, he's technically doing a little bit less than we've seen him do. I think there are moments where he is doing a lot, and there certainly are leaning on him a lot, and they're riding him a lot to ask him to do, you know, a lot of things on the court. But I also think it's so early in the year. It's 9 games into the year. If he's doing and taking on these bigger things in January when they're playing the Nets or something like that, if I don't even know if they play the Nets in January, just as an example, or they're playing, you know, the Magic, were just really bad, and then maybe you wonder if they're trying to just wrap this up early. but it's 9 games into the year. I think he will get some rest. I don't think we're ever going to see him play 82 games again, probably. He's going to get nights off. I think that's going to happen, but it's again, it's so early in the year that I don't think it's, we're quite know how exactly what to make of this yet. And they're certainly, you know, taking a look at the East as well. I mean, if you look at where the Cavs are right now, they're the best team in the East. They on even just you look at record wise, they're the best team East. And they're 8-1. Hawks are at 7-2. Raptors 7-2. Hornets 6-3. So the Cavs are there. They're playing the Hornets this, or the Raptors this week. Obviously, they beat the Hawks. They've already beat the Raptors as well. They've beaten the Hornets. I think they do want to definitely get out there and kind of cement this, but I think all these teams are definitely playing above their level right now. I think the Hawks and the Raptors are better than I think we would have expected. Cavs are 8-1 in their last 10. They're 5-1 at home, 7-1 against the Eastern Conference so far. They're certainly feasting, but I think LeBron, of course, is a part of that. I also think they're going to rest later when they get a chance to do so. I think that's just almost inevitable for them to do that. So we move on to looking at the Hornets game. It's going to give you 3 takeaways this week. There wasn't a lot of nuance that I really kind of wanted to look at in this game, but there's 3 things I think really stood out in terms of this game. So Channing Frye, number 1, was really, really good. He was 6-12 from 3, 3 blocks. Blocked Spencer Hawes and seemed to really enjoy that one. And he was the big that Tyronn Lue went too late. This is maybe the best we've seen Channing Frye play this year. His shot looked great. He was just automatic whenever he got the ball. And he was in the game late, and it wasn't Tristan Thompson, it wasn't Kevin Love. He really carried the Cavs' offense in a lot of ways. He was just so essential to what they were doing that I just was so impressed by what he did. And it gives you a lot of confidence in what he can be as a backup center. He's never going to be this great rim protector, but we saw him be a smart defender. We saw him hold his own against guys that certainly have offensive skill. He wasn't going to make these dumb decisions. And he's not a great rebounder, but he's going to do things really well that really maximized well with LeBron, and he was just hitting his shots, and you want to give that guy minutes. I think it's really funny to look at this game, and you think about how the Cavs won. Technically speaking, LeBron and everyone didn't play that well. LeBron 8-21, Kyrie 8-17, Love 6-10, but he kind of was really only effective the first part of the game, even though he still had a double-double. Channing Frye had 20 points on 7-15 shooting, 6-12 from 3, as I said. Only 3 boards, but, you know, he's making shots. Amon Shumpert, 15 points, 6-9 from the field, 3-5 from 3-point to go along with 2 assists, 3 boards, 3 turnovers, so not great there, but a plus 7 off the bench. And he was also in the game late, ended up playing more minutes than Kyrie. You know, Frye played 25, just 1 less than Kevin Love, 4 less or 5 less than Tristan Thompson. These guys were essential to the Cavs winning this game. No Jarris Smith, so they stepped up in the shooting department for sure. And Frye specifically was just so good. And the Cavs won a game because of Frye and Amon Shumpert, which is hilarious to think of when you have LeBron James and Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love on the team. It's just a weird game. They didn't play all that well. LeBron really led them late with a bench unit. And Frye was a huge part of that. And he just played a very good game on Sunday. I think maybe the best he's played this year. Number 2, Tyronn Lue, I think, is going to ride with what's working. And I mean this in an application that's going to extend beyond this game. You know, in the fourth quarter, no Love, no Kyrie. This is a lineup with LeBron, McRae, Shumpert, Frye, and Richard Jefferson. He played a smaller lineup that was going to just shoot around LeBron, 4 quasi-shooters. And he wrote it, even though no one in their right mind is going to tell you that the Cavs are better when Kyrie and Love are sitting. That's just straight facts. There's nothing about this game that I think is emblematic of what Lue believes as a coach more than that fourth quarter. He's a guy who, as we've talked about on the show a little bit, he's not really searching for specific lineups yet. We haven't seen a set rotation. We haven't seen him commit to playing the certain set of guys together all the time. We haven't seen him really iron out how guys are going to flow against each other. And with no Jarris Smith, that certainly impacts things. That means you're going to play guys more. Dunleavy certainly started, even though he didn't play that well. This is, I kind of think, how Lue's going to manage the rotation and kind of manage how things are going. He's not a guy who I think is going to be rigid. I think if something works, if something is sparking something with this team, I think you're going to see Lue just lean on it. We've seen him do that this year already. We've seen him do that in certain situations. You know, I think it was the Hawks game where he leaned on that a little bit, the Magic game he leaned on that. He just going to trust in what's working that night. He's a field guy. He's not going to stick to these rigid plans by any means. And I think Sunday's game is emblematic of that. He leaned on this lineup that we hadn't played a minute together coming into the game. And ended up playing a ton of time together, won the Cavs the game. They win this game by 7 points, and it's because of this lineup. Jordan McRae is a guy that we talked about coming into the season as someone who I thought might be a rotation guy. I think the Cavs were certainly high on him. Had an preseason, has kind of been a non-factor this year. You know, I think came into Sunday playing 2.7 minutes a game in three games, no starts, had barely scored or anything. He plays a big role in the fourth quarter, plays a big role off the bench down the stretch in a game where the Cavs won. You know, plays 14 minutes, only makes one shot, but he was good on defense, a plus eight. I mean, good minutes from him. And, you know, they rode this lineup that we, again, had played 0 minutes together up until that point. It speaks to what Lou believes as a coach. It speaks to how he's going to coach this team. And it's just kind of, it was really fun and sort of interesting to watch. Lastly, Kay Felder, who we've talked about on the show a bunch, really kind of blew his chance in this game. With J.R. Smith out, we saw Dunleavy get a start, but that opened up minutes in the backcourt. That opened up minutes where we weren't going to see Dunleavy play 20, 25 minutes. We were going to see him play his normal minutes because he's a guy you want to keep fresh. He's a guy you want to kind of still have him fit that role. Felder got a chance over McRae in the first half. The Cavs went to him. He only played 5 minutes, and you know he was active. I thought he doesn't necessarily look athletically out of that, but I think in a skill set he looked a little bit lost in 5 minutes. On offense, he's 0-3 from the field. Had a crazy layup that he missed. Had a few moments where he just didn't look. They had this weird lineup where he was playing with Kyrie, which I didn't like. You had him and Kyrie on the floor at the same time. Just that doesn't work for me. He finishes 0-3 from the field. Two wild misses, two assists, and he wasn't good enough for Tyronn Lue to go to him later. I don't think this necessarily closes the door by any means. That would be a little takey for me to think that this is the end of Kay Felder getting minutes by any means. But I think if you look at what happened, I don't know if this inspires confidence. This is a game where he was guarding Kemba Walker at times. He's playing against a good Charlotte team that just plays very smart, is going to move the ball really well, and is, a better team in the Eastern Conference, even if they've played an easier schedule to date. But you look at how he played, taking a couple wild shots, kind of struggling on defense, looking a little bit lost. I think maybe Lou might be gun-shy about going into him again. He might be shy about using him again because of how he struggled. JR isn't going to be out for any much longer. I had expected him to play against the Raptors. I think you'd expect him to be fine. I don't think it's a big deal for the Cavs in terms of how they're going to have to fix the rotation. It's not like they need to fill these minutes. But I think with how the game played out, I think if you look how McRae played and how we saw Felder play, I think if you're going to guess one of those guys made a better impact on Lou, it was who played late and who played better, and that was Jordan McRae. And that is certainly worth noting. So the player of the game, to kind of wrap the show up, is Channing Frye. Just a great game from him. You know, 20 points for him, and just was shooting so well. Was really good on defense as well. You know, I think I have issues with him when you're running lineups with him at center, just because he's not a great rebounder. If you have him on the floor on LeBron's your four, and you're not going to rebound at a particularly high level, but he's going to shoot really well. He's such a good fit with LeBron, and we saw the capabilities of that on Sunday. I mean, to think about what the Cavs can do, they can really get a three whenever they want it, and Channing Frye, with how quick his release is, how comfortable he is shooting, especially at the top of the key, that's a really big part of that. So that's going to wrap up today's show, a quick 20-minute show for you guys. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the questions. I have a couple I didn't answer, so if you're wondering, if you didn't hear your question, I'm going to save those maybe for next week and maybe do a longer mailbag because there is no Sunday game next week. I don't even think there's a weekend game, if I'm not mistaken. But just thanks again for everybody listening to that. And you know, if you have a question, please submit it to LockedOnCavs @gmail.com and submit it on Twitter @LockedOnCavs. We really appreciate it. Again, Carter Rodriguez is going to guest host later this week. I'll probably mention it the other 2 days on the show this week that I'll be hosting. Look forward to that. And, you know, thanks again for listening. This has been Chris Manning. This has been Locked On Cavaliers. We'll talk to you tomorrow.